or else the very fact that God does not possess them, is in itself a proof that these things are not goods. Besides, many things which are wont to be regarded as goods are granted to animals in fuller measure than to men. Animals eat their food with better appetite, are not in the same degree weakened by sexual indulgence, and have a greater and more uniform constancy in their strength. Consequently, they are much more fortunate than man, for there is no wickedness, no injury to themselves in their way of living. They enjoy their pleasures, and they take them more often and more easily, without any of the fear that results from shame or regret. This being so, you should consider whether one has a right to call anything good in which God is outdone by man. Let us limit the supreme good to the soul. It loses its meaning if it is taken from the best part of us and applied to the worst, that is, if it is transferred to the senses, for the senses are more active in dumb beasts. The sum total of our happiness must not be placed in the flesh. The true goods are those which reason bestows, substantial and eternal. They cannot fall away, neither can they grow less or be diminished. Other things are goods according to opinion, and though they are called by the same name as the true goods, the essence of goodness is not in them. Let us therefore call them advantages, and, to use our technical term, preferred things. Let us, however, recognize that they are our chattels, not parts of ourselves, and let us have them in our possession, but take heed to remember that they are outside ourselves. Even though they are in our possession, they are to be reckoned as things subordinate and poor, the possession of which gives no man a right to plume himself. For what is more foolish than being self-complacent about something which one has not accomplished by one's own efforts? Let everything of this nature be added to us, and not stick fast to us, so that, if it is withdrawn, it may come away without tearing off any part of us. Let us use these things, but not boast of them, and let us use them sparingly, as if they were given for safe keeping and will be withdrawn. Anyone who does not employ reason in his possession of them never keeps them long, for prosperity of itself, if uncontrolled by reason, overwhelms itself. If anyone has put his trust in goods that are most fleeting, he is soon bereft of them, and, to avoid being bereft, he suffers distress. Few men have been permitted to lay aside prosperity gently. The rest all fall, together with the things amid which they have come into eminence, and they are weighted down by the very things which had before exalted them. For this reason, foresight must be brought into play, to insist upon a limit, or upon frugality in the use of these things, since license overthrows and destroys its own abundance. That which has no limit has never endured, unless reason which sets limits has held it in check. The fate of many cities will prove the truth of this. Their sway has ceased at the very prime, because they were given to luxury, and excess has ruined all that had been won by virtue. We should fortify ourselves against such calamities. But no wall can be erected against fortune, which she cannot take by storm. Let us strengthen our inner defenses. If the inner part be safe, man can be attacked, but never captured. Do you wish to know what this weapon of defense is. It is the ability to refrain from chafing over whatever happens to one, of knowing that the very agencies which seem to bring harm are working for the preservation of the world, and are a part of the scheme for bringing to fulfillment the order of the universe and its functions. Let man be pleased with whatever has pleased God. Let him marvel at himself and his own resources for this very reason, that he cannot be overcome, that he has the very powers of evil subject to his control, and that he brings into subjection chance and pain and wrong by means of that strongest of powers, reason. Love reason. The love of reason will arm you against the greatest hardships. Wild beasts dash against the hunter's spear through love of their young, and it is their wildness and their unpremeditated onrush that keep them from being tamed. Often, a desire for glory has stirred the mind of youth to despise both sword and stake. The mere vision and semblance of virtue impels certain men to a self-imposed death. In proportion as reason is stouter and steadier than any of these emotions, so much the more forcefully will she make her way through the midst of utter terrors and dangers. Men say to us, "You are mistaken if you maintain that nothing is a good except that which is honorable. A defense like this will not make you safe from fortune and free from her assaults, for you maintain that dutiful children and a well-governed country and good parents are to be reckoned as goods, but you cannot see these dear objects in danger and be yourself at ease. Your calm will be disturbed by a siege conducted against your country, by the death of your children, or by the enslaving of your parents." I will first state what we Stoics usually reply to these objectors, and then will add what additional answer should, in my opinion, be given. The situation is entirely different in the case of goods whose loss entails some hardship substituted in their place. For example, when good health is impaired, there is a change to ill health. When the eye is put out, we are visited with blindness. We not only lose